You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 1st of January, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, a very happy new year to you. I hope you had an enjoyable New Year's Eve. I was on the Patriotic Weekly Review end of year stream, fairly near the beginning, just after David Clues. So if you want to hear what I thought of 2025, my high points and low points and my predictions for 2026, then you might enjoy listening to that stream. And there's also a lot of other content creators on there also picking out their memorable moments from 2025. I did enjoy doing that, and we restreamed that on the Radio Albion radio players, which I'm still having problems with. It just seems impossible to get the software that we have to play the correct podcast at the correct time. It just seems to constantly be on shuffle, so you just don't know what's going to be played on there. I'm hoping I'm going to be able to get that fixed. I thought I'd have had it fixed by now. I've got another computer, but again, the software that I'm looking at using instead is also way more complicated than it actually needs to be. We used to have a very simple radio server, and you could just upload what you wanted on there, put it into a schedule, and it would play at the right time. And they no longer make that software, and the old software will no longer work on new servers because the language that's used on the new servers is different to the language that was used on the old servers. So because it's out of date, we're stuck, and I'm just looking through everything I can find online and nothing seems to work. I'm sure eventually we'll get to grips with it anyway. At least we can get live streams going on there. It's just getting the playlist to play when we're not actually live and getting it to play in the right order. That's the problem. Anyway, I want to take a look at what's happening in Australia today after this Bondi Beach atrocity. And straight away after that attack, I saw people on the mainstream media saying, oh, the reason for this attack is because Australia recognised Palestine as a state. And I can't see how that actually led to this attack. And then you get people saying, well, it's because if you do what the terrorists want, then they think that if they carry out terrorist acts, people are going to do what they want. But I can't see that terrorist action in Australia had anything to do with trying to get Jews to do something that Islamic State wanted or that those people wanted. I think it was just out and out revenge. That's what they were after. They were just after revenge. I don't think you can do anything that would actually change the Jews and get them to change their way of being, because then they would no longer be Jews. They're meant to be the way that they are. If you look at how many times they've been kicked out of countries, thousands of times they've been kicked out of countries, 120 countries in all, but multiple times. And it's always for the same thing. It's always for the same behavior. And it has no effect on them. So you're not going to be able to get the Jews to change. So why would somebody go out and carry out this horrific attack that they did in Australia? I think it's just purely revenge. It's just somebody seeking revenge, which is a horrible thing to do, to just go out and attack random people out of some feeling of revenge. I mean, we can disagree with what the Israelis are doing. We can disagree with what the Jews are doing, but I certainly wouldn't wish any harm on them. And of course, the predictable response to this attack, as well as saying it's because Australia recognised Palestine, is to say, well, it was hate speech that led to it. It was people being able to talk about what's going on in Israel with the Palestinians. It's being able to talk about that. And I don't think that stands up to scrutiny either, because if you censor people and you prevent them from being able to talk about what they want to talk about and voice their opinions, and you effectively gag them, well, they've got no choice then but to use their fists, have they? They've got no choice but to use body language to try and get their message across. If you prevent people from talking about something, then violence is going to rise to the surface. That's the reason, I think, more likely the reason why these attacks happen is because we're not allowed to talk about these things, and people feel that their voice is not being heard, that they're noticing things, they want to talk about these things, but unless they talk about them in codified language to make certain that they're not inciting hate, they run the risk of being sent to prison or losing their social media accounts. So I can't see any link between people being critical of Jews and then people going out and attacking Jews, as I say, because literally expelling Jews from different countries before has never got them to modify their behaviour, and it never will. But talking about these issues might actually make people understand that the Jews are just being Jews, and you can't change them. They're a part of our ecology. They're there for a reason. They do have a reason. I mean, you can look at it spiritually. You can say, well, they tempt us. They serve as tempters with a lot of the things that they tempt us with, that we see in Hollywood and on the internet. And if we resist that temptation, then we become better people. So you can say they're there as tempters. You can also say that they're there as punishers as well, because they are involved in the justice system in a lot of countries now. So they have an influence on judges. So they're tempters and punishers. And we need to resist their temptation, and we need to avoid getting punished by them. And when we do that, then we increase our value, we increase our virtue, and it's character building as well to resist temptation. So that's the reason why I think we have Jews, and I think they fit in with the spiritual ecology of the rest of the world. But stopping people from being able to talk about these issues, that doesn't help at all. That's what leads to the violence, I think. Well, this article that I've got here today comes from Breitbart, and the headline is, "Leftist Australian Government Announces More Hate Speech Restrictions in Response to Islamist Bondi Beach Terror Attack." And I'm sure many of you will have seen the politician's response to this attack when a journalist was saying to them, "What are you going to do about these Islamic hate preachers? What are you going to do about jihadis in Australia?" And the response was, "Well, we've banned the Nazi salute." And then he was pressed on it, and he said, "Well, we need to have more laws to prevent anti-Semitism." But we have laws to prevent people going out and killing people, and that doesn't stop people from going out and killing people. Making laws against anti-Semitism isn't going to stop people being critical of Jews. As I say, it's just going to drive it underground, and it's just going to make violent attacks more likely. So this is what they're going to do in this response. They're not going to shut down immigration. They're not going to prevent Muslims, for instance, from coming into Australia, since it was Muslims that carried out this attack, because they would say, well that's punishing the whole group for the actions of an individual. But that's like saying, well, we should just allow crocodiles to roam the streets. You know, it's only the odd crocodile that will eat a human, and the rest of them are fine. We can't punish the whole group by not allowing crocodiles roaming our streets. And it's a ridiculous argument. If there's a hazard or a threat that is posed by a particular group, then you should protect yourself against that threat. And the easiest way to protect yourself against that threat would have been if we hadn't have allowed this mass immigration in the first place. But since we have allowed this mass immigration, we have to then deal with the problems that are caused by it. One of the ways I think we could deal with the problems that are caused by it is to allow us to talk about these issues instead of just trying to force a lid down on top of it. It's like a boiling pot and you're trying to force the lid down on top of it. Eventually, there's going to be an explosion. People have to talk about things. Even St. Paul said that in the book of Acts. He said that we have to speak about the things that we see and the things that we hear. It's very important. And that was actually his defense in court. He has to speak what his eyes see and what his ears hear. So let's look at what's happening in Australia here. Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese said on Monday that his government will seek to further expand restrictions on so-called hate speech in the wake of the Islamist terror attack against Jewish people on Bondi Beach in Sydney. Now, as I just pointed out, and what has just been said here, it was an Islamist terror attack. Now, are Islamists known for hate speech? Have we got an issue? Are we hearing all the time about hate preachers on the television, particularly in Australia? No, we're not. All we hear about on the television in Australia, I am reliably informed, is the National Socialist Network. And if the National Socialist Network had been listened to and something had been done about the mass immigration going on in Australia, this wouldn't have happened. This attack wouldn't have happened. They're one of very few groups in Australia that are actually talking about the root of this problem, the cause of this problem, which is the large Islamic population that you have in Australia. And to a certain extent as well, the large Jewish population that you have in Australia. If neither of those two groups were actually in Australia, then this attack could not possibly have happened, could it? Speaking from the capital of Canberra on Monday, Prime Minister Albanese said his cabinet will seek to reach as broad an agreement as possible to implement stricter speech restrictions. The planned legislation will seek to counteract the unprecedented radicalisation of young people in Australia, he said, according to state broadcaster ABC. Now, I haven't seen any evidence of unprecedented radicalisation of young people. I haven't been hearing anything at all about young people joining Islam or becoming jihadis or anything like that. What you do hear about is all these scare stories and documentaries about young white lads joining nationalist organisations. And as I say, it's not nationalist organisations that are responsible for this attack. Nationalist organisations have been warning about these attacks being the likely consequence of our government's mass immigration policies. His announcement came in the wake of an apparently ISIS-inspired terrorist shooting at a Hanukkah celebration on Bondi Beach, which saw 15 people shot and killed. The two suspects, a father and son, Sajid and Navid Akram, are reported to have received a military training in the Philippines and are believed to have had long-standing ties to ISIS-aligned groups. So they weren't youngsters who had been radicalised, and they didn't go and do this because of hate speech online. They did this because of their beliefs. And as I said, I think they did this out of a sense of personal revenge for the things that they saw happening between Israel and Palestine. I mean, you could then say, well, perhaps we shouldn't have any news reports on what's going on in Israel and Palestine. I mean, that would be the next step, isn't it? If they're going to say, well, we can't have people being critical of the Jews, we can't have people talking about these subjects, well, the next thing to do is to prevent people learning about these subjects, isn't it? And they just have to keep it all quiet about the war that's going on in the Middle East. Of course, they're not going to do that, but that's the sort of logic that they're using by saying we need to prevent people from talking about these things. Despite no reported indications that the Indian migrant and his Australian-born son were radicalised online, the Labour Party government apparently seems intent on further restricting speech in the already censorious country. Attorney General Michelle Rowland, who will be tasked with leading the legislative push, said that there will likely be a new criminal offence created for inciting hatred, as well as a new aggravating offence for adults who attempt to radicalise or otherwise influence children online. What do either of those things have to do with this attack, though? Were there Muslims in Australia that were inciting other Muslims to go out and attack Jews? No, I don't think there was. We haven't heard anything about that. Was children involved in this? No. I mean, this man was, or one of the men that did this, it was his father that did it alongside him, but the man was an adult. It wasn't a child. The only time that I've seen sort of child soldiers, that sort of thing happens in Africa, doesn't it? In the Congo. Are they saying that they have an issue with child soldiers in Australia? No, all of this is about using this attack for political gain for the left-wing political parties in Australia to use this to try and shut down the opposition. They don't want the opposition to be able to talk about the things that they want to talk about. They want to censor them. And they are cynically using this attack to do that, to shut down the opposition. This change is critical, Rowland said. Since 2001, 120 people have been convicted of terrorism offences and 10 were children. However, today, 17 of the 33 people before our courts are minors. This unprecedented radicalisation of our youth must stop. And I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, well, have they got the same issue that we seem to have over here in Britain that was flagged up with the Prevent organisation? And what they were doing is they were arresting youngsters. There's been a few youngsters that have been arrested, and one of them lived at home with his gran, and he had drawn a picture in pencil in a sketchbook of London with a mushroom cloud over it, and he had 1488 written on a piece of paper on the shed door. You might have had keep out as well, or no girls allowed, and then had like 1488 on this bit of paper, and that was used in court to say that he was a potential terrorist. And he got a prison sentence. And they said that because he wanted to nuke London. Now, this is just a child fantasizing. I think the child was autistic as well. And there have been other instances of youngsters under the age of 18 just saying silly things. We all say silly things when we're children. But what the state does and what the justice system does is it looks at things which I would suggest are very clearly an exaggeration and just a fantasy that a child is having. And they then link that with actual terrorism. I doubt very much whether these children that I've read about in the British papers, whether they were actually planning any terrorism. I think what they were doing is talking in a chat room and each trying to outdo the other with how much they hate the diversity and how much they hate the multiculturalism. Doesn't mean they're actually going to act on their words. As I say, young people say all sorts of silly things. And this could be another reason why there's more young people being arrested now, because young people are more likely to say silly things. Older people aren't so likely to do things like that. They're not likely to draw pictures of London with a nuclear mushroom cloud above it, for instance. And yet these sorts of things are being taken seriously by the state as if they are sort of that the person is declaring an intent by doing that. So it is concerning that so many youth are being arrested for this, but I don't think it's because the youth are turning into terrorists. I think it's a fault with our system that we have, that it's criminalising our youth for getting upset about these things. I mean, there is one way that you could look at it. You could say, well, for young people to be interested in politics and to be interested in the collapse of our civilization, which is effectively what's happening, that shows, you know, that they're probably good people at heart because they're concerned about what's going on around them. They're not just interested in themselves. And their response to it may be wrong, to think about terrorist acts like bombing London or anything along that lines. But that's just reflective of the fact that they're young adults. They're barely out of childhood and they don't really understand these things yet. And what would be much better for them is if we had more nationalist organisations that weren't persecuted by the state, because then these children could go and join that nationalist organisation and they could learn from their elders things like violence is never going to be a solution, and that's not the way to do things. We have to do things within the law. We have to do things democratically. And if you have older people that speak about that to youngsters and perform the role of mentors, then they're not going to want to go out and carry out stupid terrorist acts, are they? But all the while that you outlaw these organizations and you ban people from talking about these things, that's just going to create an environment where terrorism is more likely to happen. Meanwhile, Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke said that there are also plans to create a hate register of banned organizations. The register would prescribe groups that do not meet the current threshold for terrorism. So banning groups which don't actually break the law, that means, while still banning them from operating in the country. He cited the Islamist Hizb ut-Tahrir, and that's a Syrian organization, and the neo-Nazi National Socialist Network as potential first targets. Now, the fact one of those organizations is from Syria and the other is from Australia kind of says that the real target here is the Australian one that they've got there. Again, this is just a cynical appropriation of this atrocity to come out with anti-nationalist legislation. They're politicizing this so that they can get rid of the opposition. That's why they've put the National Socialist Network on there, who have nothing to do with this attack whatsoever, and who have been warning that these attacks are likely to take place because of the government's own immigration policy. These organizations for a long time have been able to take hate right to the threshold without using the words violence and escape any further terrorist listing, he said. Well, if they're not breaking the law and they're being careful about what they're actually saying, then they're not inciting violence, are they? If they were inciting violence, then they would be arrested. Amid the move to further crack down on speech, critics have circulated comments from Chris Minns, the leader of New South Wales, the state where the attack took place. Months before the attack, Minns admitted that censorship was necessary to allay the tensions caused by mass migration. So censorship is necessary to prevent people criticising a government policy, is effectively what he is saying there. In March, the New South Wales Premier said, "We don't have the same freedom of speech laws that they have in the United States, and the reason for that is that we want to hold together a multicultural community and have people live in peace." Well, they're not living in peace in Australia, are they? We've just had this attack that took place there. And he's just said they don't have the same freedom of speech that there is in America. And yet this attack still takes place. So I would say in places where there's more restrictions on free speech, that these attacks are more likely to happen. Also, in proportion to the number of Muslims that you have there. And of course, not all Muslims are going to be jihadis, but there are a proportion of followers of Islam that are jihadis. And if you look at France, for instance, I think France has the most acts of terrorism occur there, and they also have the highest percentage of Muslims there in Europe. And that's why they're going to get a higher percentage of jihadis, is because they have a higher percentage of Muslims. So if you don't want any jihadis in your country, you have to be like Hungary and not allow any Muslims in there. And Hungary doesn't have any risk of terrorist atrocities taking place in the name of Islam because it doesn't allow Muslim immigration. Unfortunately, we haven't been like Hungary and we have allowed Islamic immigration. And the result is that of that is that there is a risk of terrorist actions. And the people that are saying that, people like the National Socialist Network, who are saying there is a much higher risk of Islamic terrorism happening if you have Muslims in your country, they're just trying to shut them down. They're just trying to ban them. They think if organizations are not allowed to actually voice that criticism of the government's immigration policy, then the problem will just go away. It's not going to go away. On top of planning new speech rules, the leftist Albanese government has also vowed to implement more controls on guns, with attacker Sajid Akram having been a legal owner of 6 guns, despite Australia's strict gun laws, and his son was tied to ISIS figures. Despite Akram having immigrated to Australia in the late 90s, there has been no discussion of restricting immigration from the leftist government. Of course, because that's what any sensible person is going to say. They're going to say, look, these guys were not of Australian ethnicity. They were Australian citizens that had a different ethnicity. They had a different heritage. Their heritage was a non-white heritage. If you reduced non-white immigration, perhaps you would reduce the risk of these atrocities, the same as you would risk other things that happen, which we know happen, such as Afghans being 20 times more likely to carry out sexual assaults than white people, which is one of the statistics we have learned. So there are just constant problems that are caused by immigration. And the people that try warning about this and saying, look, we've got a hazard here, look, we've got a problem here, instead of addressing that and trying to do something about it and having a debate about the question, well, what can we do about it now that the genie is out of the bottle? Instead of discussing it like adults, they just want to silence the people that are raising the alarm. They just want to treat the concerned citizens as if they are children. Well, another result of these terrorist attacks has been that there's been a clampdown on New Year's Eve. We talked a couple of weeks back about the cancelling of New Year's Eve in France, in Paris. They didn't have any bands playing. They still had the fireworks, but they told people not to go out and they weren't going to let people out. And in Australia, they had to have extra security in there. And this is another article, a related article, and it's on Breitbart, called Australia Welcomes New Year with Extra Security. Remembrances of Bondi Beach Victims. Australia's New Year's Eve celebration was a more solemn affair than usual this year, with a heavy security presence on the streets and a nationwide minute of silence for the victims of the Bondi Beach massacre. Thousands gathered for the celebration, held up their phone lights in the modern rendition of a candlelight vigil, and the images of a menorah and a dove were projected on the pylons of the harbour bridge, along with the words, peace and unity. Yes, don't get upset about this. Don't start talking about diversity being the actual cause of this. Let's just have peace and unity. How can you have unity when you have diversity? It's like two opposites. You can't have unity at the same time as having diversity, can you? So they're trying to get us to hold two opposing points of view within our heads at the same time here. Talk about cognitive dissonance. About 2,500 police officers were dispatched to patrol the streets of Sydney on New Year's Eve, some of them carrying rifles. New South Wales Premier Chris Minns conceded that some revellers might be troubled by the sight of police carrying firearms and weapons that you haven't seen before. But I don't make any apology for that. We want people to be safe in our community, Minns added. Well, clearly they don't want people to be safe. They wanted people to be safe. They wanted the Australians to be safe. Then they wouldn't have changed the immigration policy, would they? And brought people in that were likely to carry out terrorist acts or likely to rape and sexually assault the Australian women, like some of these other groups are disproportionately responsible for. And when people see the police carrying firearms, I mean, that's saying that they've had to change the whole makeup of Australia. They've had to change the whole mentality of Australia in order to fit in with this diversity. They're saying that it's so important to have diversity that they have to have the police carrying weapons around now because diversity is so good, because it's so great. It's just like the Christmas markets now have to be closed because diversity is so good. In Germany, they have so much diversity now, you can't have Christmas markets because the cost of the security for them is so expensive that people can't afford to pay for it. And the state's not going to pay for it. So at the same time as we can actually see that our society is changing, we're unable to do the things that we used to enjoy doing because of the diversity. At the same time, the governments are telling us that diversity is wonderful. It's such a great thing. Throughout the week, Minns urged Australians to show their defiance in the face of the Bondi Beach atrocity by turning out in large numbers for New Year's Eve. Well, how about they show their defiance for it by protesting about it and protesting about the government's response to it and how it's the government's immigration policy that caused it in the first place. Of course, that's not what they want people to do. They just want people to go out and pretend it hasn't happened. That's why they're saying go out and show your defiance by turning out in large numbers. What they mean is pretend this didn't happen. Throw this down the memory hole. The best way of demonstrating defiance to that kind of ideology, that horrible crime, is to go about living your life the way you would ordinarily do it and get some joy out of New Year's Eve, safe from the knowledge that there are thousands of police and a massive government response to this terrorism event, he said on Wednesday. But not the correct response, not the response that would actually stop any more people that might carry out terrorism from coming into the country. There's been no calls to change the immigration policy, and the people that call for changes to the immigration policy are the ones that he's trying to outlaw. They're the ones that he's trying to bring this law in order to silence. He says, I particularly encourage those in Sydney not to be cowed or fearful by the threats of terror and the testing times, particularly that the city has seen, but to come out to celebrate and to see in the new year in a uniquely Australian style. Opposition leader Susan Lee agreed. Most New Year's Eve celebrants who spoke with reporters found the heavy police presence to be reassuring. I bet they did find it reassuring, but if it wasn't for this attack, they need not have had police on the streets with weapons. You know, it's all just indicative of the direction that Western civilization is heading in. In order to keep the lid on the boiling pot, they need to devote more and more and more resources into stopping it from overflowing, stopping the pot from boiling over. Now they've got police out there with guns. Eventually they'll have to have the army as well. Eventually they're going to bring in all these laws that you can't say certain things. They'll be having cameras on you all the time. They'll be watching you all the time. And every resource that we have will be just dedicated to trying to force diversity to work and force people not to criticise it. I mean, why is diversity so important to them? As I've said before, I think it's because of the banking system. I think it's because they need to continually expand the money supply, and the only way they can do that is by bringing in more and more people. Because whether somebody gets their money in benefits from the government or whether they get their money from working, that money still has to be created. And when it's created, it inflates the money supply, and that money supply has to be inflated in order for people to pay back the interest on their loans. And I think that's the source of it. That's why you have this just insane allegiance to diversity and multiculturalism. I think it's the economical system that we have that is at the root of it. The police are out in force in other cities as well. A German visitor to Melbourne resignedly told the AAP that everywhere can happen things like this. We had it in Germany too. And I bet he did say that resignedly, everywhere this can happen. I mean, it wasn't everywhere that that could happen 40 or 50 years ago before we started with this mass immigration. These sorts of things were unheard of in the West because we didn't have the sort of people in the West who might carry out these actions. On Monday, 17 families of the Bondi Beach shooting victims wrote an open letter to Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, demanding a federal inquiry, or a royal commission, as they are called in Australia, to investigate the surge in anti-Semitism and the feeble government response to it since Palestinian terrorists massacred Israeli civilians on October 7th, 2023. Again, I don't see any link that there is between what they call anti-Semitism here, which is people protesting Israel's genocide of the Palestinians. People protest that, and they say that that's a surge in anti-Semitism. How is that responsible for this? If they think that that is responsible for this, well, the next step is to just ban anybody talking about what Israel is doing in Palestine completely. You should have no news from the Middle East. If you're not going to allow people to talk about these things, well, you might as well just hide the existence of them in the first place. That's the next step. And it's a completely ridiculous step, isn't it? That's why it's so ridiculous to stop people from talking about these things. We need to know why clear warning signs were ignored, how anti-Semitic hatred and Islamic extremism were allowed to dangerously grow unchecked, and what changes must be made to protect all Australians going forward. The letter said, well, perhaps they've been concentrating too much on the alleged far right and not concentrating enough on the Islamic threat. And I think that would be quite clear just looking at these articles and the way that straight away they're starting to talk about right-wing nationalist groups that need to be banned. It's quite clear that their focus is on that and not on Islamic terrorism. It's on the nationalists, isn't it? It's on what people are saying online. It's not on the threat of Islamic terror. Albanese has resolutely dismissed these calls for a royal commission, preferring to appoint a retired bureaucrat to examine potential failings in procedures and laws that led to the shooting, with a report due in April. And of course, they'll just say, well, our procedures are good. We have intelligence. We work with our allies. And they won't look at how the real reason for why this happened, which is because of their immigration policy. It's Australia's immigration policy that's responsible for this. And preventing people from pointing that out is not going to prevent more of these sorts of things from happening, unfortunately. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.